Make it a great day, Judy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Bye, Judy.
So real quick before we end, because I want to say thank you to Ty, and keep listening. We only have probably a minute. I want to say thank you to Ty for being my board op. He's fabulous. Thank you to Jim for being here. And please consider giving to KBOO. You can do so for our community. We're all part of this community. And stay tuned for Sprouts. That's on next. You can give to KBOO at kboo.fm/give, clicking the red donate button on the app, or text KBOO to 44321. Finally, you can send us a check. Address it KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And Jim, do you have any final words? Where can people get information?
www.anoregonstory.com. And also, one very important organization to pay attention to is 1,000 Friends of Oregon. There's a lot of groups around the state: Central Oregon Land Watch, Thrive of Hood River, Friends of Marion County, different groups. And 1,000 Friends has information about all of them, and it's a big force in keeping Oregon.
Jim, you're fabulous. I really appreciate it. I think we probably, I'm not taking any more calls. Have a great day, everybody.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. It's time to make your voice heard and your impact matter. Join us for our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $45,000 goal by September 20th.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Lynn Borton, host of Choose to Be Curious, a show all about curiosity. Come, choose to be curious with us.
I'm not trying to denigrate the scale of our problems. I'm not trying to say that they're smaller than we think. I'm saying our capacity to solve problems is much larger than we think.
Think for a moment about the most interesting people you know. What makes them so interesting? One theory, to which I subscribe, is that interesting people are interested. They pay attention, listen well, dig in on any manner of topics. Perhaps they choose to be curious and see people and the world around them as full of opportunities. So I am excited to be joined today by someone known for his many interests, someone Tim Ferriss has dubbed the most interesting man in the world, Kevin Kelly. Kevin is a senior maverick at Wired, an award-winning magazine he co-founded in 1993. He's co-chair of the Long Now Foundation, a membership organization that champions long-term thinking and helping one another be good ancestors. He's founder of the popular Cool Tools website and the author of multiple best-selling books about the future of technology. His newest book, Excellent Advice for Living, is a collection of 450 modern proverbs for a pretty good life. It's chock-a-block with what I would call curiosity practices, both explicit and implicit. He's best known for his radical optimism. I am delighted to have Kevin Kelly join me today. So welcome, Kevin.
Oh, it's really a treat and a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, this is fun. So I have come to think of choosing to be curious as acting on the idea that there's opportunity in the unknown. So a very optimistic enterprise, actually, which is why I spend all this time talking to people about how it comes up for them and how we might do a little bit more of it. And I'm excited about your assertion that over the long term, the future is decided by optimists. And you call yours a learned optimism. You choose to be optimistic. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I think I am genetically, you know, primed to be optimistic, but I have actually chosen to become even more optimistic each year because I've realized that it's the optimists who basically have made our world today, and we should try and be as optimistic as we possibly can. We all can't be the same degree, but we can be better than we were last year, and that's because the stuff that we're headed to in the future is complicated. And to make a world that we really want to live in, that's full of all this stuff like AI and genetic engineering and constant monitoring with our computers, we have to imagine it first. We have to actually have a vision of what we're, because it's not going to happen accidentally. We're not going to make this good thing accidentally. So we have to kind of engineer it in some ways. We have to imagine it, and we have to imagine that it's possible. And that act of imagination, believing something and believing it's possible and then trying to do it, is the act of optimism. And so we're not going to get to this future that we want unless we are optimistic about it. And so I want to be one of those people who help make this future that I want to live in. So we have to go beyond the kind of ordinary visions of the future, which are mostly shaped by the stories that we see and watch. And because they're stories, they're going to take place in a dystopian future because they make the best stories. And all the visions that we have of where we're going are pretty negative because that makes a much better story. In some ways, the future could be boring as a story. So we have to have some alternative visions of our collective future. And I think practicing or choosing to be a little bit more optimistic will help you be on the side of those who are creating the future that we want.
So give me an example of what that looks like for you.
Well, a great example was the communicator in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Which was someone's imagination. And it became kind of a goalpost, a little bit of something that people say, I want to make that. That's what the iPhone is. I'm going to make that thing. It's so cool. So there was a success story where that was sort of a guiding star for a lot of people who were just trying to imagine it. And so, we have other things like flying cars and that, but we want also a vision, like I would suggest right now, the price of solar panels continues to drop, and we could imagine them becoming so cheap that you could orient them in any direction. You can make fences out of them. You could put them on every rooftop. You could put them on siding of houses.
Yeah.
And we would have this sort of decentralized grid of everybody producing the energy that they needed. That's possible. That's a future that I would like. That's a future that maybe we'll have. We can work towards that, making more details as we needed to figure out how to do that. So that's what I'm interested in, is sort of imagining a high-tech future that's a friendly future that I would like to live in, and maybe other people as well.
I find that refreshing, and in a sort of, like, it's unfortunate that it seems refreshing to me.
Yeah.
That imagining a positive future seems somehow radical.
Yeah.
Like, that should not be radical.
Right. Right. And I'm not a utopian. I make a very clear distinction. I call myself a protopian. I'm interested in progress and prototypes, pro versus con. And the difference is that I think these new technologies will produce problems beyond what we have right now.
Right.
The more powerful the technology, the more powerful the problem. So this is not a problem-free world. So I'm not trying to denigrate the scale of our problems. I'm not trying to say that they're smaller than we think. I'm saying our capacity to solve problems is much larger than we think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really important thing for us to kind of think about. Right. And you've said somewhere, I don't remember where this was, that the problems of today are created by the solutions of the past. So we'll keep creating problems.
Yep.
And but if we can kind of stay just ahead of that wave with the confidence that, like, okay, we've been creating problems for all of eternity.
Right.
We're going to keep creating problems, but we can work with this.
Yes, we can. And some say, well, what's if that's just a wash, right? You're just making new problems. But the thing that we get out of all that that's very important is we get choices and options and opportunities.
Yeah.
We keep expanding the possibility space of somebody's genius to succeed. And so I tell the story of me imagining that Mozart was born before the piano and the symphony was invented. What a loss.
Right.
Not just to Mozart, but to us. George Lucas being born before cinema came along, the tools of the camera. What a loss that would be. So we're morally obligated to kind of make more choices and possibilities so that these peculiar geniuses that all of us are born with have a chance to find that medium to express themselves. And so there's a young Shakespeare somewhere in the world today, and she's waiting for us to invent the tools for her genius. And that's what we get out of this exfoliation of more and more technology, even though they have more and more problems.
Yeah. I like that. One of the many bits of advice in your excellent advice for living is embrace pronoia, right? Which is the opposite of paranoia.
Right.
And choosing to believe that the entire universe is conspiring behind your back to make you a success.
Right.
What a cool way of moving through life. I mean, to your point of sort of the synchronicity, believing that there are these future amazing artists, inventors, diplomats. I mean, all of the great creative things that we need out there, just kind of waiting for us to support that. That's a real kind of shift in mindset and perspective.
Yeah, it is. And it's also related to another shift, which I'm pretty sure is true. I don't have a lot of data, but my suspicion, my observation is that the people that seem to have the most success in being creative, whether it's technically like a iPhone or art or writing or something, have internally made a shift from a scarcity model of the world to an abundant model of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. You have to generate a lot of stuff. You have to generate a lot of words to make a great one. You have to generate a lot of bad words to make a great piece. You have to generate a lot of bad art to make a great one. And in that generating a lot of it, you come to understand that the well is bottomless. You have to be at ease and making something, then throwing it away. You have to, in some way, embrace the idea that the universe is abundant in order to make the kind of masterpiece or the thing that is going to work. And so that's another shift that I think you have to make. It's a more optimistic shift. It says that there really isn't a scarcity of things. There's really an abundance of things. And if you can kind of ride that, if you can embrace that pronoia, that will help you to be more creative and productive.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just really struck that your confidence in the future is so grounded in history. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to me that your book is this collection of history mm-hmm. in some ways. It's lessons learned, right? Mm-hmm. So what inspired it?
I have three kids, and we are the opposite of helicopter parents. We call ourselves lighthouse parents. We were standing far away up on the hill. Kids knew we were there, standing out light, trying to model things, and we were not around. I mean, I dropped my son off for college and left, and I came back 4 years later to pick him up.
Wow.
Having said that, as I got older and I was collecting quotes of what other people were saying, I always liked the quote, the pithy, condensed little mind grenade of a quote. I started writing stuff down and realized that I had advice for them, which I'd never given them. And I felt, well, I should really tell them this, because I felt that I wished I had known this earlier. These were things I felt like it took me a long time to learn. And I really think they should know this as young adults. So I began writing it down, and I did a little list of initial 68 on my 60th birthday. And in the Irish idea of giving presents on your birthday, I gave the list to them and posted it, and it went kind of viral. And then I started to do it every year my birthday, adding more, and I discovered that I had more to say, more advice to give than I even imagined. And then it kind of got into a thing of trying to distill what I had learned, what would I have wanted to know when I was their age. And I gave it to my kids the eventually, and I asked them their opinion about it, and they said, yeah, you've never said these, but you did communicate them to us.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio production of global interest. I'm Lynn Borton, host of Choose to Be Curious, here with Kevin Kelly. We're talking about choosing to be optimistic.
That was the lighthouse idea of trying to model things rather than preach.
Yeah.
But now there's the version that they have written down.
Well, the rest of us have written down, yeah. Right? I mean, there are all sorts of things. This is like travel and child rearing and citizenship. And, yeah. You know, it's interesting because I read through it twice and kind of stepped back and I thought, what's the feeling of this that I'm left with? And I thought, if I had to take those 450 Proverbs and boil them down into two words, it would be considerate.
Interesting.
And that considerate in its broadest sort of sense.
Yeah. To consider, right? Something, to consider, yeah.
Because you're also, there's a lot in there that's also about sort of being nice and, you know, and kindness and all those sorts of things. But of course, I was also looking at it with my curiosity lens on. I have them flagged. I mean, there's, you know, you can see there's so many of them that were either explicitly about curiosity or kind of curiosity adjacent. And I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about some of those.
Sure.
You know, one was just pay attention to what you pay attention to. Then you have kind of the inverse, which I really appreciated, which was for a great payoff, be especially curious about the things you're not interested in.
And that's because there's this weird trade-off that we have in life, and particularly in the creative life, between exploitation and exploration, where to reach a certain level of excellence, you have to perfect. You have to go all the way. You have to optimize. You have to perfect something, to master it, to go all the way, to make it as best as possible. But at the same time, that you can't be the only thing you do, because then you get stuck on something. You're acoustic guitar, you never go into electric guitar with rock and roll, if you've seen the Bob Dylan biopic.
Right, right.
So you need to have sometimes where you're exploring, and the problem with the exploring is that it's new and it's not perfect and it's not very good and you have to throw stuff away. And so when you go to a concert and you're a musician, do you play the stuff that everybody wants to hear, that you're really good at, or the new stuff where it's may not be so good? And there's some ratio. Some people say it's 1-3. Some people say it's 20-80, where you are in the mode of exploring versus exploiting, mm-hmm. perfecting it. You need both, but you have to have that trade-off, that balance, where you are giving up that perfection. And so this idea of being interested in things you're not interested in is a way for that exploration, that 20% or the 30%, whatever it is, where you're going and you're trying something new that you don't even know that you like, and then you discover, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And so we have a rule, my wife and I, when we go out to eat, which is that we'll order two dishes that are of our favorites.
Uh-huh.
Things that we know we love, that is the best in the house. And then one dish that's brand new.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. So right? It's funny that you mentioned that, because that was literally the next on my list, was this explore or optimize right. formula that you right. have. And, you know, in the curiosity space, there's a lot of conversation about explore versus exploit. And I just want to say to you, I love having it be explore or optimize as right. opposed to exploit.
I mean, yes. There's some baggage with exploit, but yes.
Another one of yours is be curious about another person's view mm-hmm. is the most powerful way to change their view, which feels, I don't know, very timely right now. Yeah, let's put it that way.
Yes.
I just wanted you to speak to that, because I just feel like it's something that we all need to be spending a lot of time thinking about and doing right now.
Yeah, it's why does that work? I mean, it doesn't work all the time, but it works in some small ways. And that is, you want to be active listening, meaning that you're not just a doorstop, like a microphone. You're actually engaging in to some extent. And I think what happens is that when people are talking it out, they can also often see what either they don't really believe comes more evident to them, or where their own ideas don't stack up mm-hmm. by kind of having to tell you in a very friendly, gentle way. That act can either reinforce what they believe or can cause doubt. So that's one of the things that happens when you have an active listening engagement. And two, I think, of course, the real thing is at some point in a really active conversation, there will be an opportunity for you to say your side. And at that point, they will be interested in it. And so that conversational mode is just a better way to change people's minds. And by the way, on both sides. And you may come away with your mind being changed.
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So years ago, I had a guest. She does evaluations, assessments for nonprofits. And she said, you know, I have all these tools and metrics and everything, but you know, in the end, I always ask the best question ever, which is, anything else?
Yes.
And I think of that now, because right, on the last page of your excellent advice right. for living, you say your goal is to be able to say on the day before you die that you have fully become
yeah.
yourself.
Right.
Bring that home in a curiosity context. How does that play out?
Well, that's a very, very high bar.
Yeah.
That's a very, very high bar. And I think we are opaque to ourselves for whatever reasons and I think we're discovering this a little bit in AI, the nature of our consciousness and intelligence hides itself from us, I think in part so we can't muddle in it too much.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't, you know, we don't have like, we don't have access to the source code. Because if we did, we'd be in there.
Help us.
Yeah, right. And so we're kind of opaque to ourselves. And so this process of coming to who you truly are requires a huge amount of curiosity about who am I?
Yeah.
Right. And so you have to work at it because it's not going to be evident. And by the way, this is why I think it's a curious, wonderful paradox that it takes everybody in the world to help you become unique. Becoming unique is not a solo project.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's like kind of weird. And so you need everyone around you, friends, family, customers, clients, colleagues, to help you illuminate yourself. And you have to be curious about who you are and curious about what you could be in order to uncover that. It doesn't happen passively. It's a very, very active act to uncover. And so, you know, I mean, many people talk about, you know, the ways in which you have to be out of your comfort zone, where you have to kind of test yourself, where you have to go somewhere where you're tried, because that's the only way to unlock and uncover who you authentically are. And that, I think, for some people, there's a very, very few who get going on that early. They have an idea of kind of who they are pretty early. I was not one of them, and most people aren't either. It takes most of your life and all its detours and deflections and backward steps to get there. And so that curiosity about who you are and about the world that you're in is necessary. Is just necessary to get there.
Oh my gosh, this has flown. But before I let you go, I want to invite you to join me in my big jar of wannabe analogies. Are you game?
Okay.
Okay, here it is. Actual jar. I have slips of paper in here. Random words on it.
Pick a good one.
I've got one for you, one for me, and one for our listeners.
Ah.
And we're going to make an analogy to curiosity with whatever is on here. Okay. Yours is a sidewalk. How is curiosity like a sidewalk? Mine is upholstery. And I have one for the listeners. So do you want to give it a shot or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay.
Give me a little bit of a...
How is curiosity like upholstery? Well, upholstery is a choice we make about the look and feel of something. And I guess curiosity is our way of really digging into and appreciating the look and feel of something. So that's how it's like curiosity.
Okay.
How is curiosity like a sidewalk?
So sidewalks in my mind are, one is they lead somewhere. Two, they sort of are an improvement over the ground because they're more level. They've managed the ground. They're where you put your foot. So curiosity is sort of like the yellow brick road, right? you want to follow it to where it goes. So we've got sidewalks, and you follow the sidewalk. You have different choices to make, but if you follow the sidewalk, you arrive where you should be. Nice. And I think if you think of curiosity as a sidewalk that will take you somewhere, and wherever it leads you to, that's where you should be.
Nice. I like that. And listeners, yours is lightning. How is curiosity like lightning? Let me know. Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, hashtag analogy. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for this. This has really been a pleasure.
Well, I appreciate your questions. If you want a good answer, you ask a machine. If you want a great question, you ask someone like yourself. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your curiosity. It's really wonderful. You have a great spirit, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find all my shows at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky, all at Choose to Be Curious, where you can share your lightning analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my fascinating guest, Kevin Kelly. Find him online at kk.org, where you can sign up for his weekly Recommendo newsletter, links on my website. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a conversation about curiosity and work and life. I'm Lynn Borton, and my guest has been Kevin Kelly. The music you heard was One Little Triumph by Piano Mover via Blue Dot Sessions. Sprouts' theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Lynn Borton in Arlington, Virginia. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOOs, loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOOs Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made, community radio. Donate now by going to KBOOs.